This podcast is sponsored by Athletic Greens. Now, I'm sure you've heard of Athletic Greens from a thousand different other podcasts, but the reason why I think this is the case is because it works. I've been using it for years, and the biggest benefits that I've realized is that it gives me more energy. I feel like I'm getting a full and healthy diet. My poops are better, and I'm sorry to say, but it's true. And so if you're somebody who really wants a healthy diet where they're confident they're getting all their micronutrients, go on and head over to drinkag1.com/Farzad. drinkag1.com/Farzad, where you'll get a free vitamin D plus K2 bottle and 5 free travel packs. Thank you so much to Athletic Greens. And now onto the podcast.
12.5 is the best version of full self-driving ever by a long shot. It's not perfect. It's still doing weird things. It gets into the wrong lane sometimes, but it is by far the best version ever.
So JD from 80 Driver has joined us, and he just got 12.5 FSD downloaded in his car. He has the best FSD channel on YouTube. And this conversation was scheduled ahead of time without us even knowing that FSD was going to drop 12.5. And he ended up getting it like 2 days before he landed here. And he has a video on his channel. And we're going to talk about that in crazy detail, why we think this means that Tesla is on the cusp of solving full self-driving and robotaxi for their fleet. We're also going to highlight the things that doesn't do well, but more importantly, why this paints a very clear picture of where self-driving technology is going for Tesla.
Are you going to upgrade, Farzad?
Am I going to upgrade to Hardware 4?
Yeah. Are you going to trade in?
Dude, okay. Okay, so I... Okay. This is a problem. This is a problem, right? So I really think I am not... a fan of some of the tone and the rhetoric coming out of Tesla and Elon as it pertains to Hardware 3 with FSD recently, because it's like, you know, for the longest time up to this point, it at least, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, the vibe I was getting is like, hey, Hardware 3 cars are going to be robotaxi. 1 million robotaxis by 2020 implies Hardware 3 is going to be able to do it, right?
Yep.
Now it's like, well, Hardware 4 parameter count 5 times, another 8 times coming soon. We have to emulate it on Hardware 3, you know, so on and so forth. So, but again, I'm extrapolating, and I'm trying to like, I'm making an assumption on, and I'm reading between the lines, right? So
Farzad's got his panties in a wad.
But yes, I will probably upgrade. Just to say, I'll probably upgrade. But I do think it's going to pose an issue to some owners. I think there was going to be a lot of upset people if Hardware 3 doesn't do robotaxi. But I could be wrong. How do you guys feel about that?
I think it'll do robotaxi.
Okay. Really?
I'm like 80% sure it's going to do it.
I mean, maybe just in specific areas, but I feel like they can do it. Especially, you know, everybody seems to think that if you look at what's happened with like large language models, the first ones made were the biggest and hardest to run, and they needed the most compute. And now the ones that they have running for pennies on the dollar and are super small models are drastically better than those. So it seems to me that the same thing could happen where it's, you know, like they're, I think they did this with Hardware 4 first because there was just a big push to prove like, this is all possible. And in my opinion, 12.5 proves that it is possible. But I think that thinking that it's just going to be more power needed, I mean, it's tough. I understand. I really do understand both sides. But I think that Hardware 3 can easily become as good as a regular human driver. And then all they would have to do at that point is limit where it's allowed to go and not make it do certain maneuvers like unprotected turns and stuff like that. And then it would be drastically safer than a human driver. And in my opinion, that's what a Hardware 3 robotaxi looks like. Maybe I'm wrong. I have no idea.
So, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, I think when we had James Dama on, for those that are not familiar, James Dama is an AI expert. He echoed the same sentiment. Is that Hardware 3 at some point, like it should be able to do robotaxi in specific situations, and then Hardware 4, Hardware 5 become the platform for this this robotaxi actual feature built thing, the two-seater auto door opening, who knows what kind of feature set it's going to have, thing, right? The hardware 4, hardware 5 is that. But regardless, even if hardware 3 can't do it, right? Even if hardware 3 can't do it, it sucks for owners like that had the assumption that it could do it and they bought the car thinking that it would do it. But in about, by the end of the decade, what is it, like 90% plus of the fleet is going to be hardware 4 plus anyway. So it's like from a business perspective, it doesn't matter, because it just comes down to, do you have the technology figured out? And the hardest part of the technology is actually getting the car to drive, right? So if they figure that out, nothing else matters, but you'll have upset customers. So unless it can, you know, and I heard you on your video from today that I watched, which was phenomenal, by the way. Shout out. Super, like, dude, I love your videos so much. They're so good.
Appreciate it.
There's so much work that goes into them. It's I can tell, just watching like 30 seconds of it. I'm like, this dude, like, he did like 17 cuts in here and he had to transition. I'm like, my head's exploding with how much work he had to put in. But one of the things you said is like, hey, one of the things they could do is just upgrade hardware 3 to hardware 4. But I thought Elon said that it's not backwards compatible. Am I misremembering?
Oh, no. So basically what I meant by that is that 12.5, as far as we know, is still completely trained off completely hardware 3 data. So it has the data from those lower resolution cameras, and that's the entire training model is still based off of hardware 3. The only difference with 12.5, I mean, honestly, I don't know this for sure, but the only difference we're being told is the increase in parameter count. So I'm saying with new efficiencies, they can stick a much more capable full self-driving computer into a Model 3 car and still use the same camera setup and have it be able to run these way larger parameter models, if that's even needed.
Got it.
But I lump hardware 3 and hardware 4 into the same kind of boat, where I don't even think hardware 4 is going to just be robotaxi everywhere in the US all the time. With the current camera setup, I think they definitely can both be robotaxi, but I think they're both going to be limited to certain areas. It's not until we see, I think, like an actual robotaxi with like front bumper cameras and like zero blind spots directly in front of the car or around it and things like that, where I think, okay, maybe it can drive anywhere. I kind of think of hardware 3 and hardware 4 in the same way, I guess.
I love your point about, you know, the older models being, they were very large and they didn't perform all that well. Like if you think about the biggest model of GPT-3, for example, versus GPT 4.0 mini, like 4.0 mini is cheaper to run, faster, better. And I believe it's a smaller model than at least one of the previous, definitely smaller than GPT-4, potentially smaller than even GPT-3 or 3.5. Someone correct me in the comments, because I'm not exactly sure on full parameter counts on those. But one that I am a little bit more familiar with is, you know, if you look at the Meta models, you've got the Llama 3, especially now Llama 3.1, 8B is 8 billion parameters. And it is a far better model than Llama 2 that was 70 billion parameters. So like there's an 8 billion, a 70 billion, and then a larger version for Llama. And the smallest Llama 3 model is better than the medium-sized Llama 2 model, basically on every metric. And so that shows us, like, we can get better performance out of less neurons, less parameters. And, you know, I think this is a trend that's going to continue. So here, my little tweet, it just says that there are many strategies to get better performance out of a neural net. Some of the most common ones are you improve the objective function. You get better at telling the neural net exactly what you want to achieve. And the better you do at that, the better that the thing performs overall, because it knows exactly how to tweak all of the parameter weights to achieve that goal. And the second one is you train on better data. You just have more diversity or better examples or, you know, whatever. There's so many different ways to train on better data. You can train with more compute. You can train with the same compute for longer to achieve the same thing. Like all four of those strategies are very common ways to get a better performing neural network. And all four of those ways produce a model that has higher signal to noise ratio. So that means better performance with less parameters. And then, number five is you can just add more parameters to the neural network. And that's where instead of getting a higher signal to noise ratio, you do increase your performance, but you're not increasing it necessarily as fast as you're increasing the number of parameters. So your signal to noise ratio actually goes down. And the way that I kind of think about that is like you're shining a bright flashlight into a dark room as you're looking for what are the functions that are going to be like, what's going to be possible here? And like, we're going to find some interesting new features or capabilities in this dark room that we're exploring as we're trying to figure out how to build these neural nets. And then once you figure out, okay, this is a thing that's possible, then that tells you, okay, now I can do that. Let's figure out how to do the same thing with a lot less neurons so that we can bring that signal to noise ratio back down and have higher signal, yeah, and less noise. That way, because when your signal to noise ratio is bad, it's just a harder model to run. It's more expensive in terms of energy, in terms of everything. And so it's like it's the first brute force way that you throw, you know, spaghetti at the wall to find stuff, but you don't want to do that like long term. And that's in my mind what Elon is doing here with increasing this parameter count by 5 times is he's looking for like, let's find where this thing actually works the best it can possibly work. And then once we get that, then we can use some of these other four. And then there are more strategies besides these as well. You know, if we get architectural, like these are all things that they can definitely do. They're going to have more training compute. And they can definitely even throw a larger amount of training compute for more time on the same exact data and get better performance in less parameters. So like these are all things that are available to them without any sort of breakthroughs. Then we seem to be consistently getting breakthroughs in architecture that let us get higher quality models in the same exact footprint as well. And then, you know, as James was talking about, that's all on top of, you know, these neural nets are running a layer of software that's at like the top level of abstraction of everything that we know in software. And they're built on, you've got to have CPU code, and then you've got to have GPU code on top of that. And then you get to your neural code, and there's possibilities for optimization in all of those layers for a specific piece of hardware that is like, that's my interpretation of what Elon has been saying here about hardware 3, is that we need to do more work on getting, I don't know if it's the NPU code optimized so that that's running the matrix math a little bit tighter, or if potentially it's, you know, we're overflowing our GPU or we're overflowing our CPU in order to keep up with the rate that we're processing this data. Somewhere in there, I think, is where hardware 3 is having a struggle right now. All of that to say, there's so many different opportunities and options for Tesla to continue to improve the functionality of the FSD stack and to get it to fit on hardware 3, much less, you know, hardware 4 and in the future models. Like, we just have a lot more room left to grow functionality. All of that is just a long kind of technical way to explain that I 100% agree that this is something that's going to be possible. It just takes more time. And so hardware 4 is probably going to be the place where we spend a little bit more time to figure out what's possible. And then as we discover, like, hardware 4 will become the bleeding edge of the research, but it should backpropagate to and become backwards compatible with hardware 3 over time. Just like today, we saw that 12.3.6 is now shipping for the first time ever to MCU1 Tesla Model S and X computers.
Okay. So let me say back what you said in my stupid brain and see, tell me if I got it right. Okay. So an analogy that I'm thinking through is in an organization, you have, say, 100 people, right? And typically your top 20% are going to do most of the work versus your bottom 80%. This more parameter thing, the way I'm thinking about it, as you were saying that, is okay, it's very similar to that, where if you think of people as parameters, like more variables to use to try to solve something, the bottom 80 are going to do less work than the top 20, like are going to create less value than the top 20. Is that a right, like the correct way of thinking about it? Just because you have more of something doesn't mean that it's actually better.
Yeah. Well, and let's take that analogy a step further. Say, okay, hey, we've got 100 people, 20 of them are rock stars, 80 of them are meh. we want to get to 40 rock stars. So what are we going to have to do? We're going to have to hire another 100 people. And then we're going to have to fire about 60, you know, 100 of those people over. Like, we're going to take the top 20 in the new 100, and we're going to keep the top 20 from the old 100. And then we're going to fire the bottom 100.
Got it. So you're finding the right parameters.
Yep.
You're trying to find the right. An increase in parameters doesn't mean you're going to use all the parameters long term. You're just finding what parameters are actually the most valuable for the model.
Essentially, yes.
Okay. So that makes a lot of sense. Okay. And then around the point of backwards compatibility, or saying like, say, hey, the hardware is not going to be up to par. And so sort of as JD was going through this, it kind of got me thinking, if Robotaxi is as valuable as we think it is, what is the percentage of the cost relative to the total revenue that car can create if it's self-driving? So like, let's say the chip or the computer costs $2,000, but that car is able to make $10,000 for Tesla in the long term, or $20,000 or $50,000, just give the computer for free. Like, it's in Tesla's best interest to have self-driving Teslas out there, right? So it's almost like, from that perspective, as long as the camera suite is good enough for it to perform that from a resolution level and from a placement level, right? So then from a strategy perspective, regardless of where this goes, and there will be upset people, let's say, if Hardware 3 can't do it, there are paths for Tesla to solve this relatively easy, in theory, if what we're talking about is correct.
Yeah, I would say absolutely. Like, the cost of upgrading those computers, if that's even needed, will be pennies on the dollar if it actually can be a robo-taxi. Just like Han's car, he has a 2018 Model 3. That didn't ship with a full self-driving computer. That was something that was added in, you know, when it was released a little bit later. So if you look at what 100 watts of compute would get you, I don't know, 10 years ago versus what 100 watts of compute would get you now, it's a lot. Obviously, it's more. You know, we can fit a much larger computer on the same amount of power. So I think that if that's needed, I think it'll be a no-brainer, because it's literally a computer they could swap out behind the glove box.
And even the cameras could be like, you, the only thing, you just have to have stable interfaces. So if there needs to be a new computer, it needs to have the exact same plugs and all the interfaces, like the same power, everything as the old computer. But then you can upgrade it, you know, to all new components on there. And then the cameras would need to plug into the exact same plugs. If you're talking about, hey, Mr. Supplier, I'm going to order, there's like 2 million plus Hardware 3 computers on the road. And so, like, if you're ordering 2 million units, I'm pretty sure you can specify whatever form factors that you need for those interfaces. And that's something that, you know, in the worst case scenario can be done. But obviously, that is going to be expensive. And I think that James Dalma's point comes back in here, that if it's probably easier to do a lot more work in software to just make the existing computer and the existing cameras work than it is to replace those. Like, you can justify a lot of really smart engineering time on how do we just make whatever the latest version of the code is run on this old piece of hardware. And yeah, I mean, just think about how insanely optimized video game code had to be back in the day when you're running on like an Atari or an original Nintendo. Like, all that stuff is written in straight assembly because you don't have any extra room to do anything. And like every task or functionality or move or piece of graphic or piece of music that you add in is literally taking away from functionality somewhere else. Like, that is how optimized code can get if you're willing to put in enough work. And we're like so far away from that with the current versions of FSD code. Like, it is just like, in comparison to writing straight assembly code, it's bloated by 100 or 1,000 times compared to that. And so you can do a lot to shrink that down in wherever your bottlenecks are, in order to get it to fit on that computer and run with those constraints, if you're just willing to spend enough engineering time to do that.
Yeah, and to be clear, I think you're 100% right, and I think that they will solve it with the current 3 hardware. I'm talking a like the worst case scenario that I can think of for hardware 3 is really not that worst case of a scenario, because
I agree.
If it's required, upgrading those computers would be insanely expensive, but if robotaxi is solved, nothing will be too expensive for Tesla. People aren't understanding what it would mean if a car can actually drive itself with nobody in the front seat. The value is just insane. Nothing will be too expensive. They could upgrade all those cars and it would be like a penny, like in the long run.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get into the nitty gritty of this, right? Because the reason why you're on, which happens to be the luckiest coincidence of all time. So AI Driver was supposed to be on JD here. He was supposed to be on, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, we settled on the date, or last week. I don't even know what time is anymore, having a newborn, right? Although it's getting better. I'm becoming a little bit more connected to reality. But like, hey, come on, let's talk FSD. Let's talk, let's see how it's going. And then 12.5 drops. And then you get 12.5. And then you drop the video literally 2 or 3 hours before we sit down, okay? And then up to this point, we've spent the last 20 minutes talking as if this whole thing is already solved. It's like, yeah, they got it. Yeah, this is done already, guys. Okay, so contextualize for us 12.5 within the context of Tesla solving autonomy and getting to robotaxi. Why are we all so excited?
Yeah, so it's going to be tough to explain, honestly. It's very tough to get across in words how it feels inside the car. It's if you have anybody around you that has 12.5 right now, I highly recommend just going for a ride, because you'll immediately understand. It's the way that it seems to be able to predict the future better than ever before. And it's control. It's like, it's not reacting to anything anymore. It's just, it makes you understand that it truly knows what it's doing. There was some question marks with previous versions. Like, I was very vocal in my feedback of 12.4 that I was a little bit nervous in the direction that it was going, because it was obeying laws and doing a few things better, but it was also very jerky and had some very harsh steering inputs and made it seem like it didn't actually understand the concept of driving. I mean, not that it didn't understand the concept of driving, just that it wasn't a very good driver. But 12.5 is an extremely good driver. It's anticipating things way better than, like, anybody that I drive with. When I'm sitting in the passenger seat, I'm the worst passenger ever, because I'm like constantly monitoring what they're doing. And version 12.5 is the first version, and we're seeing that feedback on X, is that people can sit back and not think about it. That little red flag that pops up in your head when like the Uber driver does something weird isn't popping up anymore. When it's deciding to do something, it doesn't second guess itself and just continues through. Like those examples of the pedestrians that I had, and the way it moves through them in a way that they understand. Like, nobody gives the car a second look for doing something weird anymore. And it's those small things that really add up to something huge with 12.5, where it's like, finally. In my opinion, 12.5 is proof that it's very easily solvable with more time. Because if this is the performance we get out of just, I don't know how long the end-to-end has even been in development for, the last, what, year and a half?
That sounds right.
It's like, the future looks very, very bright.
So one of the biggest variables that I've highlighted on this channel that would dictate the success of Robotaxi was going to be how good the car can communicate intent to the passenger and driver. So the two primary variables for self-driving vehicles to be adopted are safety, which is regulatory, and then comfort and or feeling like the car knows what the hell it's doing, right? Which is intent. This is the second one, right? And what I'm hearing from you is that the second part, the intent piece, looks like 12.5 has made a drastic improvement on, to the point where it is potentially just as good, if not better, than some or most drivers on the road. Is that a fair way of categorizing what you just said?
I would say, yes, it is. I would say 12.5 is already better than the majority of drivers signaling intent on the road. And even in complex situations, like I showed you the one with the accident and stuff, the way it asserts itself, even when other vehicles are around and these crazy situations are happening, it is very good at signaling to other drivers what it wants to do. And not only that, remaining smooth, which smoothness is confidence. And that's what, when you're sitting, like if I'm sitting in the back seat of the car, just like that Uber driver who does something weird and I'm like, hey, what's going on? People don't want to feel stuff like that when they're back of the car. If a driver is driving smooth, even through rough situations, it gives you a lot more confidence and trust in the system.
Would you, so if you were Tesla, would you make this thing go wide right now as it stands?
Oh yeah. I mean, I 100% would. 12.5 is the best version of full self-driving ever by a long shot. It's not perfect. It's still doing weird things. It gets into the wrong lane sometimes, but it is by far the best version ever.
So talk a little bit about those like shortcomings, right? Because that's one of the things that when people follow this story as well, it's never going to get to RoboTaxi. It's never going to get, you know, there, because every time you come out with an update, you're going to get these little things that keep coming up and the tail is too long and you're always going to have a safety issue regardless of how much better you get because of just how crazy the roads are. Do you agree with that statement? What are you seeing that would make you agree or disagree with that statement? Sort of walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, I agree that this approach can cause weird problems, almost like a large language model's hallucinations. And that's a problem that I expect that we'll continue to see for even the next years and years of development, honestly. Like I think that this is going to continually be a problem. The question is how much of a, like, even with these issues and even with it doing weird things, it's going to get better than a human. Like, even when it's on the roads being an actual robo-taxi, there's going to be videos of it getting into weird situations and like blocking an intersection and reversing and going forward. And, you know, like these weird things are going to happen. But if it's already 10 times as safer than a human, it like doesn't even matter. And not only that, we're also seeing those weird kind of situations go down a lot. With 12.4, for example, one thing that it lacked a lot of is consistency. I would take it through the same intersection and the same conditions multiple times, and it would do it differently every single time, sometimes even missing the entire intersection and the turns. And 12.5 seems much more consistent in my drive so far. Obviously, it's only been a few days. But I think just like we're seeing large language models hallucinate less and less, we're going to see full self-driving hallucinate less and less.
So I guess the two variables there are frequency and severity, right? So it's like, how often is it happening and how soul crushing is it? You know, every 100 miles, the car tries to ram into another car head first. I don't think that's happening, right? It's more like every 100 or 200 miles or whatever that number is, it gets in the wrong lane or it gets a little too close to the curb for comfort or, you know, without having reverse, it gets into a dead end and it's like stuck. And it doesn't know how to get out, right? And is that a fair characterization of where we are now?
Yeah, honestly, where I think we're at right now is that if every car on the road was replaced with a Tesla on self-driving version 12.5, I think accidents would go up, but deaths would be way lower.
So we just have bumper cars, like real life bumper cars.
Yeah, and people would be talking about how terrible they are and how they're crashing all the time. And little do they know, they would have died in a car accident the week before. You know, the people whose lives it's saving the people have no idea. That's the toughest part of this whole problem.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting way of putting it. And obviously, you know, I know you agree with this too, but like that's not an acceptable place to be to roll this out. But if they did choose to roll it out and every car was a Tesla on the road, like if Tesla was able to go to Austin and be like, hey, I'm just gonna Elon's you know how like you have those like fake giveaways on X or like YouTube of like, you know, here's Elon Musk is giving you 1,000 free Bitcoin or whatever. But if Elon actually went to Austin and be like, yo, every resident of Austin gets a free Tesla with 12.5, and if you use 12.5, your insurance is free, We're saying that Austin is going to be weird. It already is. They want to keep it weird, right? But no one's going to die on the roads, right? Like that's not an acceptable place in the current state. But one of the things we talked about was like, hey, it's obvious that with more time, this is solved, right? And I agree with you, but can you sort of maybe help us understand better why you're so confident making that statement?
I think seeing is believing, and being behind the wheel of the car as it's doing some of these things and having it behave better than the best Uber I've ever had in a lot of situations makes me a believer. I'm not saying that they're going to solve it soon. I still think there's a huge long tail of problems to solve. But what we're seeing with 12.5 is that full self-driving now not only has the basics of driving down, but it does it very, very well, better than a human. Like that's what you're seeing a lot of the feedback of 12.5 right now is people saying it's a better driver and smoother than I am. And I think this is just the beginning, and that is going to continue. And there absolutely is a long tail of problems. You know, don't turn left except on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. And, you know, they're going to have to fix those and, you know, address those. But I think in the very close future, it can be a system that is at least as good and gets in less accidents than a human driver all on its own. 12.5 makes me extremely confident in saying that.
One of the things you mentioned on your video was that it feels better than a Waymo. So have you been, like, how often have you been in a Waymo? And can you help communicate why it feels better than a Waymo?
Yeah, absolutely. So to be fair, I've only had two Waymo rides, and it was in San Francisco. And Waymo has been consistently smoother than full self-driving. The acceleration and the braking profiles that Waymo have just been fine-tuned over years and years, and they're really, really good. Nice, consistent slowdown, nice, consistent speed up. Where you really start to see the difference is in odd scenarios, especially around vulnerable road users like cyclists and pedestrians. That's where Waymo struggles the most because, you know, if a pedestrian even looks like he's about to walk in front of you, the car will stop. It's programmed to be as safe as it possibly can be. But when you're sitting inside the car, sometimes it doesn't feel like that because it feels like it doesn't have a full understanding of what's going on. And I'm not saying that Waymo is a bad system by any means. I mean, heck, it's actually driverless when full self-driving is not. But it feels to me when you're sitting in the wheel or behind the wheel of the car that full self-driving with 12.5 has a much better understanding of the intentions of all the vulnerable road users around it and the other drivers on the road, basically. I would say that Waymo's probably still smoother when it's alone on the road and it doesn't have to interact with last second decision making. But when it comes to last minute decision making and staying smooth around vulnerable road users, I would say 12.5 has surpassed it.
Great. This is so exciting. Like I'm trying so hard. Okay. So here's the problem now, right? This is why this time is so weird. And like 2024, if you follow Tesla closely, has been a really odd year because the progress that this software is making is kind of mind-blowing if you really think about it. You know, at the beginning of the year, V12 came out with the AI stack, new end-to-end neural net. And then we're halfway through the year and we're already talking about, oh yeah, no, like it's obvious that they're going to get this done. It's like super obvious. It drives better than I do in a lot of situations. The improvements that they're making with dot releases on older hardware up through 12.4. And if 12.5 makes it to hardware 3 with the same performance as hardware 4, that's going to be freaking, like, I cannot wait to try that, right? It's very obvious that the improvements have been crazy. And the most important variable in tracking the story was the how quickly it would make improvements. And it seems to be playing out, right? But then you overlay that with the last 8 years, 6 years of some of the similar rhetoric, right? That came from me. You know, I would get really excited. I'd be like, this is obviously going to get done so soon. And then they would hit a freaking ceiling. And then they would need to rework the architecture because they weren't on an end-to-end neural net method. They were doing heuristics. They were hitting that CPU versus hitting the inference compute in the chip. And the inference compute is basically giving the AI the ability to write its own code. And the AI gets better by just throwing more video at it, right? And just halfway through the year, we've already made these like quantum leaps in performance and in capability, right? Am I the only one who feels like I am so conditioned to not believe it's going to happen that I'm actually missing out that it's actually happening? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like it doesn't feel real. Like it feels like we're in this like weird place where it's like, because you look around, right? You still kind of see the same rhetoric. Like, oh, there's no way they're going to solve it. You know, you got Tesla Q. Oh, these guys are, you know, fucking lunatics. There's no way. Fraudsters, blah, blah, blah. Just spreading lies and bullshit. And then like I get into my car every day with 12.4, not even 12.5. And I'm going hands-free everywhere. I'm just letting the car drive. And I'm not even touching the wheel anymore. Again, hands-free. They went hands-free in the span of a few months, right? So does anyone else feel that way? Like, or is it just me?
No, I totally get it. And the also, it's amazing how fast we become accustomed to these things. I was like, oh, 12.4. I had a lot of complaints about 12.4. But if you compare 12.4 to what full self-driving was the year before 12.4 released, like, my goodness, it was a quantum leap. But we're kind of, I understand, we're kind of conditioned because we've had, full self-driving has been coming next year for the past 6 years. So I do get it. And I sometimes find myself overly optimistic too. But I also think in another year from now, 12.5 is going to look like a complete joke. And we'll be talking about all the problems that the whatever new version has every, you know, when it gets in the wrong lane every 400 miles. So. It's really interesting times for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, really in the past 5 months now, we've only been working with three base models. There's 12.0 to 12.3.6. That's one base model. 12.4 is a base model. 12.5 is a base model. Compare for me, in your experience, what 12.4 felt like compared back to maybe one of the earlier versions that went to customers of 12, which we'll say 12.2. Like, do you feel like 12.4 was a significant step up from 12.2? And then what's the step from 12.4 then to 12.5?
Yeah, absolutely. So there wasn't very many people that received 12.2. I was one of the few. But in my opinion, 12.2 before 12.5, 12.2 was the smoothest one. The way that it approached corners, the way it accelerated and braked, all those things were really, really good. Where it had problems was in other kinds of situations, like, for example, unprotected turns. It was a step back in unprotected turns, in my opinion, and other things where it wouldn't avoid certain objects in the road and everything. And it would feel really confident and smooth in running over things. You know what I mean? But it was doing the wrong thing. So 12.3 improved upon that. And it got a little less smooth, but it was more capable. It was obeying a lot more laws. And that's exactly what we saw with 12.4, in my opinion, is that, a lot of people say it feels the same as 12.3. I don't think it was as smooth as 12.3. It got even less smooth, but more capable. It was able to make the U-turns it wasn't able to make before. if it gets into the wrong lane, the majority of the time it's like, okay, I'll just go this way and reroute instead of doing something crazy. Like we were seeing it technically getting better, but in my opinion, feeling a little bit worse. And I was a little bit nervous about the future of full self-driving when 12.4 came out, because I'm like, okay, yeah, this is probably a lot closer to robo-taxi, but a lot worse of a driver assistant, because I wasn't using 12.4 as much just because it wasn't driving as smoothly as I would or 12.3 would. And that's why 12.5 was such a big, huge change, was that they basically proved that they've improved the law obeying even further from 12.4 and also made it the absolute smoothest version that has ever come out, even like way smoother than even 12.2. So I hope that kind of explains things a little bit better.
Yeah. And I mean, just to think about how much progress that is in the space of 5 months compared to, like, you know, we would make 25% of that much progress over the course of multiple years. Really, you know, if you go back to 10 versus 11 and those types of things. So, I mean, that is one of the reasons why I agree with you, Farzad. Like, it seems like the pace of progress and the fact that they didn't even, you know, 12.4 didn't even release the whole fleet before they're like, okay, we're just going to basically, I mean, as far as I know, no new versions of 12.4 have shipped since 12.5 began shipping to new people. And so it seems like Tesla is just ending the rollout or the expansion of 12.4 and now moving forward purely with 12.5. And the fact that they can do that, like they don't have to complete the rollout of one point version before they can just say, you know what, the next one's just so much better. It's not even worth putting time and energy into, you know, continued development of 12.4 period. We're just going to go to 12.5 and then eventually 12.6 and on. And the magnitude of progress from what was it, February of this month or of this year, the first versions of 12 started rolling out to now, like massive, so much progress. And if we can continue to do that moving forward, I mean, we do start getting into very interesting areas very quickly. So, can JD you comment also on, you know, obviously Elon has said that it's getting very difficult to find those intervention cases in 12.5 and especially 12.6. What is your assessment of what he, like, it doesn't seem like it's that hard to find interventions in 12.5. You know, it's not hundreds of thousands of miles or anything at this point in time. So what's your interpretation of what he meant by that, or where it is difficult to find those interventions? And, you know, what is that, the pace of that progress look like?
Yeah, that's another tough one, because I agree with you. It's not hard to find areas that you need to intervene. What I kind of think, and I don't know if this is actually the case, but I think Tesla basically has a stockpile of like super difficult driving footage where the car was doing something wrong in the wrong version. And I think, like, I can imagine, like one of the things he said was like 12.4 is a 5 times less intervention rate than 12.3. And I just wasn't feeling that at all. But I think what it probably means is that they're like, when you really shove 12.4 up against a wall and it's forced into a decision, it was making better decisions than 12.3. So I think a lot of these critical situations where the car maybe wasn't slowing down soon enough before, or wasn't swerving out of the way for something until the last minute, like it probably, 12.4 probably is 5 times better in when you're shoving it up against the wall compared to 12.3. But I was having more interventions, like technically interventions, than ever, because the car wasn't doing what I wanted it to do. So in my case, it might have been 5 times more interventions, especially because it was just wildly changing lanes. Like, and it's also, interventions are different to different people. Like if I was making a YouTube video on those same drives, I might not have needed to intervene at all. Like I do for comfort. So I would say maybe in critical situations is what he was talking about. The car is getting better and better in critical situations. But yeah, I definitely agree with you that it's, at least in my area, it's not very hard to find areas where I need to intervene.
Yeah. And knowing how Elon speaks, I would say that's probably correct. It's like the safety critical, likeliest probability of injury or death or crash, 12.4 is to five times better than 12.3.6, right? Like you said, it's like at the limit, decision-making. I think, you know, as we were talking, I was sort of like reminded of the fact that Tesla is still going to double its compute by the end of the year, its training compute, right? And they're still working on making the actual process of generating the, I call it the AI code for the car. They're still working on making that way better by maximizing the number of parameters they can run and then picking and choosing the ones that actually will make a significant positive difference to the model, right? So you still got those two things going. And it's, I mean, you guys tell me, like, tell me if I'm going down the wrong path here. But one of the things we talked about a while ago, and I can't remember if you were on the pod or not, JD, but I remember talking about it with Hans, is that if you think about the other types of AI solutions that we've built, and the one that really comes to mind are like not necessarily AI, but neural network based approaches, I guess, are for like chess and Go as an example, right? These things are sort of underpinned by the same type of technology. It's you just show a model a trillion examples of how to play chess without telling it exactly how to play chess. And then it gets to a point where it's like terrible, pretty good. Oh, it can kind of beat a grandmaster. Oh, it sometimes beats a grandmaster, and then God. And it happens like that. Same thing with Go, right? With AlphaGo. Horrendous. Loses all the time. Oh, it can kind of compete with the best Go players in the world. Oh, it only lost once against a Go player, like the best Go player in the world, and then God, like immediately after. Okay. I feel like it feels like that with self-driving right now, where we're like sort of in these like transitions from we've gotten out of the worst driver ever, and we're transitioning from, oh, pretty, you know, it can do things from time to time, to, oh, it's actually almost as good as some of the best drivers out there, but it's still making mistakes, right? Like it's still making silly mistakes. And I feel like we're two step changes away from, oh, it's the, like, it's literally the best driver ever, and it's probably going to make a lot less mistakes than the best driver ever, and then it's God, right? So talk me down that ledge. Tell me why I'm wrong.
You're wrong, Farzad, and I'm going to explain to you why.
Thank you.
Because even if it is a God and it is a much better driver and getting into much less accidents than a normal driver, I still think we're going to see clips from Dan O'Dowd of it doing weird things that a good, like a, even a 16-year-old wouldn't do, even when it becomes a God. I think that's the major thing that people are going to have to overcome, because
are you saying God has flaws? Oh my God. Wow.
Chess, like the examples you brought up with chess and Go were really good, because they're very complex games, but the rules never change. With driving a car, the rules are constantly changing. You can have some really one-off situations that you've never seen before, like almost every time you go out driving. Like the other day, I had on the East Coast, I had a flagger holding up a stop sign and waving me through. You know, and the for stuff like that, to understand human intention, it takes a lot more than teaching it the rules of the game. It has to understand humans more, in a way, I guess. So I would say that I think you're right in that it will become a god, but it might not look like it to most people.
I actually have, yeah, really updated thoughts on this topic after listening to a podcast that Bill Gurley recommended, that was between Misha Laskin and Sequoia Capital analysts. And so Misha is one of the guys who was on the Google DeepMind team, and he has done some kind of cutting edge research, and now they're launching out on their own to try and create agents. But he was talking about, you know, one of the real difficulties in machine learning and just specifically citing the, you know, the AlphaGo context. And he's saying that one of the beautiful things about these games, whether it was chess or whether it was Go, is that they have a razor sharp, perfectly clear objective function. And that goes back to the first thing that I wrote in my little post about things that you can improve. It is, you know, like several orders of magnitude more difficult to write the perfect objective function that tells you when, like, that defines what does driving like God look like precisely, because we don't really have it, right? Winning, like, it's a very clear binary outcome when you're playing Go or you're playing chess. Like, you win, lose, or draw. That's it. And almost every time it's either you win or you lose. So it's like a, you know, a 98 or 99% just complete binary outcome, win or lose. And so because it's so clear, then that really speeds up the process of the neural net system converging to that God scenario, that God level performance. And, you know, we don't have, like, you know, maybe you could take a Formula One driver and put them on the road and, like, make them follow all the laws. And you could define that as, like, this is AI driving God. But that guy's a human and he can only drive so many miles in a day or a year or 10 years. And so, you know, you can't really get enough data to define what does driving like God look like to the AI.
I don't think having Max Verstappen in the roads is a good idea.
Well, he's got to be Max Verstappen with those reactions and also driving, yeah, according to every law.
Good luck
ever,
with that.
Ever. Yeah. Yeah. Very, very unlikely. But so, I mean, you can kind of get the point though that I'm making, that, so how do you tell the AI, what does God-like success look like precisely? And to do that, you basically have to come up with, like, this average of what are the generally the best drivers and what would they generally do in this situation. And that's just a lot fuzzier target to aim at, which makes it much harder for the system to get to that perfect solution. And, oh, by the way, there's a lot less room for error in, you know, as we're trying to make a bunch of experiments to find what's the perfect way to achieve that performance. Oh, we can't mess up a whole lot other than in simulation or in shadow mode. Like, once it's on the road and it has to perform in the moment, it's got to be pretty dang good. And so we have a limited ability to experiment and we have a much fuzzier target to aim at. And so those things make it a much more difficult feat to achieve than becoming God at AlphaGo. So now that said, I still think we're going to make it happen. I still think we're going to achieve it because, unlike fortunately or unfortunately, while humans are decent at driving, we're really not that great. Like, honestly, the bar to become God at driving is pretty low. And so that's where we've got a, you know, God compared to humans. Like,
yeah,
we kill a lot of people every year.
We sure do. And I think, like, the way I think about this sort of, like, conceptually is there's a spectrum of perfection, right? So there's this, like, 0 to 100 of perfect. Like, zero is chaos and just total imperfection. And then God is 100, right? And in this imperfect, like, God as a concept of perfect, right? And then if you really think about where are humans on the spectrum of 0 to 100 for, like, let's say driving, we're probably at, like, 0.1, right? Or, like, 0.05. We're talking about perfect. Like, every single input and decision we make is flawless 100% of the time. Like, really think about how often we do that. It's probably, like, it's literally almost never. How many people are like this, like, driving around, you know, like, you know, like, on their phone, like, looking up, looking down, times that by the amount of people on the road, you know, and then you put a multiplying function on, you put those people next to each other, what happens on the road, right? Okay, so to the entire conversation, so okay, so God at driving might be 100 times of 0.05, right? So for us, it feels like God, but from a scale of perfection, it's 5 out of 100, right? So, like, for perfection to be reached, you don't really need to reach perfection. You need to reach 5 out of 100. And if you reach 5 out of 100, you've solved it. The universe is perfect. God is perfect, whatever your belief system is. And you just got to hit a 5 out of 100. You have to fail really hard at perfection and you'll get approved everywhere instantaneously because you're 100 times better than a human driver because we suck so bad because we're so trash. We're so trash at driving.
Absolutely. I think you bring up a very good point because once full self-driving's ability becomes that of the average human, it will already be magnitudes better because it's not glancing at its phone. It's not going out for a drive when it's tired or has one too many. It's not going to be speeding and doing random lane changes and accidentally cutting people off. All those types of accidents from being distracted or from not paying attention when you didn't see somebody or something like that are all out the window immediately. So even if the ability of it is only good, is as good as the average human, which is not that good, it's already way better.
Well, and just thinking about the concept of perfection, you know, you can think about the ability of, you know, like a Formula One driver, a Max Verstappen, to drive very precisely at very high speeds, like at the very edge of the envelope of traction and power and torque and braking and all these things. And a perfect AI driver operating in a fleet of other perfect AI drivers could, like, we could all be commuting to work at hundreds of miles an hour, potentially, with zero chance of catastrophic failure and accidents or death, and dramatically reduce, you know, the time that people spend driving while still being relatively smooth in acceleration and braking and all these things. And like, humans are just not even capable of such a thing. You know, like, the Autobahn is the closest thing that we have to this, and it is one single place on the face of the earth where we even begin to approach really utilizing the capability of a vehicle in its on the speed spectrum in order to get from where we are to where we want to be. And so, like, that's just one very concrete example to just make it very real for people what you're talking about. Like, this is something that should, like, the laws of physics say this is perfectly possible. There's nothing in physics that says that we can't do that. It's just that we aren't good enough at controlling the vehicle, understanding the physics, and paying attention and having the correct set of skills to do that as people. And eventually, computers absolutely will be able to do all of those things.
So I was looking up some data here while you guys were chatting, just to kind of back up this point, right? So this is from 2020. This is from NHTSA, so the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration of the United States. 38,000 people, 800 died in 2020. So this is from 2020. I think this number slightly up in 2023. I wasn't able to find it, but it's basically the same. So 38,000 people died. But look at this. 2,200,000 people injured in U.S. roads in 2020. 2.2 million people injured and 5 million non-fatal crashes, but 5 million crashes in the United States in 2020. That's a large freaking number. And then if I pull up another study here, so this breaks it down by, so this is in fatal crashes, right? And what caused the fatal crash? So 18,000 of them had at least one of three behavioral factors. 10,000 were unrestrained. So what does unrestrained mean specifically?
I think like no seatbelt or something, or what does that mean?
Okay. So 10,000 were unrestrained. So I highly doubt a self-driving car will operate if you don't have a seatbelt on. So right there, boom, you have 10,000 deaths potentially taken out. 8,600 were alcohol impaired. 7,700 were speeding, and 2,100 were both alcohol impaired and unrestrained, so on and so forth, right? But like, the top three are wear your seatbelt, don't drink, don't speed, right? 10,000, 18,000, 25,000. So 25,000 out of the 38,000 deaths, a self-driving car will address like basically immediately, which is kind of crazy. But the point I want to make there is, if you just look at the data itself, and this is why, like, this is why Waymo is approved. This is what Waymo is able to operate, is because of that data. It's because, hey, like, if we do it right, like, lives will be saved. Their problem is scale. And we've talked about that 1,000 times. It's like, hey, Tesla's, and we can talk about it here too. It's like Tesla's advantage is scale. It's this computer system with the cameras is 100 times cheaper than a Waymo approach and 1,000,000 times more scalable because it's artificial intelligence and not a bunch of heuristic code, right? So how does Tesla roll this out, right? Because that's one of, like, the other questions now that we have to discuss, because this is where I flip-flopped so much in what I thought robotaxi was going to be, you know? But the more I hear Elon talk, the more I'm growing convinced that he's convinced that people will want to add their cars to the network and that Tesla will likely not have to run its own fleet in a lot of cases, but they will fill the gaps where needed over time. So in essence, it's like, you know, when he says it's kind of like Airbnb on wheels, like, literally, I think what he's implying is that Tesla's is not going to own and operate the cars. Tesla will sell the cars. And then it just happens to be that those cars are the only ones that you can add, or maybe not the only ones you can add, but they're the ones that will start on the Tesla network. And those same cars are not allowed to operate on any other self-driving network. They have to operate on the Tesla network, right? But the onus is not going to be on Tesla to ensure that the cars are clean, that the cars are maintained, that the cars are running, you know, that all that stuff. It's going to be on the operator, like me as an owner, to ensure that that's the case. And by Tesla doing that, they, you know, set themselves up in a situation where their costs of getting this thing off the ground are really limited in a lot of situations by the app, like having an app that works, taking responsibility of an accident if it were to happen, right? So liability, insurance, and then in limited situations, it's going to be operating a small fleet to fill in the gap, right? So their ability to get this off the ground, they're relying heavily on existing owners to turn that on. So is that how you guys are reading this? Like, this is going to be much more, it's going to be a lot more Airbnb and less Uber, or do you think it's going to be more Uber and less Airbnb? Like, or, you know, less Waymo, or more Waymo and less Airbnb, let's say. Like how are you guys thinking of the strategy long term?
So I think that their dedicated robo-taxi platform will probably be very easily produced. I think they have that in mind to just pump out as many of them as physically possible and be able to just load up cities immediately. And also, I forget the actual numbers, but I think it's in the high 90% of rideshare rides have two or less people. So I think the rest of the fleet with people opting in to have their cars would really just be picking up those cases where, like, three or four people want to be together in the same car. And I think the way that it rolls out is to specific cities that they already know work well. But yeah, I would definitely say it's the way I envision it is much more, they're going to be making a dedicated robo-taxi, and that's going to be the majority of the robo-taxi that we see out on the streets rather than people opting in. Because I personally, you know, I don't want people doing crazy stuff with my car, you know, like I've rented out a car on Turo a few years back, and you know, you just don't trust people. So I understand why some people would want to do it. They would want to run their own fleet and everything, but I think the owner's cars would just have to pick up that last few percent of, you know, when the rides have more than two people.
And you think Tesla will own and operate all those two-seaters?
Yeah, I think, I don't think they're going to sell them. I don't think it would be wise to sell them. I think they might make another platform of vehicle with a steering wheel that's based off the same platform that they can easily produce for very cheap. But as far as the actual robo-taxi with no steering wheel, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I think the majority of people think that you're going to be able to just buy it, but I think it's, I think Tesla's going to own them through and through.
So I think where I'm stuck is like, if Tesla were to do that, right? So let's assume that they can crank these out at let's say 2 to 3 times where they are right now from a volume perspective. So they can make about 1 million Model Ys per year. Let's assume Robotax, whatever this two-seater compact is, smaller, more compact, less materials, more streamlined, smaller square footage. So it's like everything points to, hey, you're going to be able to make way more of these. And they've said it in their investor day. They were very clear about Gen 3 platforms. We're going to be able to crank these out like crazy, right? So then if you set up manufacturing capacity to make 3 million of these per year, then if regulation is not caught up to the point where you can run these without a steering wheel and pedal, you're throttling production like crazy for a really long time, it seems like, right? It's getting to the point where, you know, unless the entire United States is like Tesla, you can operate as a self-driving network, which can't happen because the states dictate the rules of the road, not the federal government, right? So it's going to be on a jurisdiction by jurisdiction basis, sometimes even local, not even state, you know, different countries and whatnot. Then you're going to run into a situation where you're going to build all this capacity and no one's going to want to use it. Or like nobody, you can't even put it out there to operate because it's literally useless. So I wonder if they're still going to go down the path of adding a steering wheel and pedal to the car. For like, let's say for the first 3 million that get built, 90 to 95% of them have a steering wheel and pedal to try and overcome that likely scenario where they're going to be throttling production to try and wait for regulation to catch up in a lot of these places. And by the function of doing that, you are automatically putting a bunch of robo-taxis in people's hands where, like, you know, the regular person that is looking for an affordable vehicle happens to be sitting on an asset that will also be a robo-taxi, right? And so, and I wonder if that's okay. Like that's kind of my disconnect. Unless Gen 3, this robo-taxi platform that's dedicated, is not really going to be built in the millions of units per year. But I have a hard time believing that because a smaller car, you need less room. And like, there's no reason why the production capacity for this vehicle will be less, you know? So it's like, and that's where I'm stuck. Because where that points me to is like, okay, so they're actually really banking on the owners to add their cars to the fleet. Like maybe you won't add it, or maybe I won't add it, you know, because I have a kid, but maybe, you know, the 10% of the 3 million people in the first year that buy a compact car, this two-seater robo-taxi model, that's 300,000 owners, right? Those 300,000 people will look to add, you know, make a little extra money on the side, because these people potentially are already working two jobs, let's say. You know, they already have a full-time job and maybe they're doing Uber on the side. Well, guess what? Uber just got automated for you, right? And they'll just add the car to the fleet. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I mean, the commentary that Elon made on the earnings call in response to Pierre Ferragu, I thought was really interesting. And, you know, this part of the conversation does make me remember that, I guess, maybe in a different light. And it's jumping out to me as more of a highlight from the overall earnings call than I think I realized at the time. It just kind of passed by. But, you know, when Pierre was basically asking, what does it look, you know, my paraphrase of Pierre's question was, what does this look like in this transition period? And Elon seemed like, apparently I'm not explaining myself very well. We're instantly going to have all of the vehicles on the network that we need to operate at the scale that we want to operate at. So I don't know if that means the rollout scale is not very big and, you know, it's just going to be some driver, you know, contributed vehicles or, you know, customer contributed vehicles to the network, or if he's thinking that we're going to be able to roll out really wide, really fast. And, you know, there was a regulatory component that was part of all that. I don't know. Like, I need to go back and re-listen to that now that I'm thinking about it, because Elon's commentary definitely sounded very confident, and beyond, I think, what most of us are thinking about from a conservative, realistic, pragmatic standpoint about the logistics of how all this works.
I think this is all pretty fun to think about, but, you know, it's not going to mean anything if full self-driving actually isn't solved. And I think Elon making these statements, I don't know. It's tough to think of what it would actually look like, even if like tomorrow they were able to have a car that was, you know, pretty like twice as safe as the average human, about like what are regulators going to do? Because in my opinion, regulation isn't as big of an issue as it was like a few years ago. I think regulators is something that I worried about quite a bit, but I think Elon mentioned these other companies have been kind of paving the way in certain areas and proving they can have a system that's reliably safer than a human. And I think I think, you know, government agencies like the NHTSA or whatever, when they see a huge amount of life saved, when they can go back to those pages and see a decrease in fatalities for the first time in years in certain cities, I think it's going to be a no-brainer for other cities to get on board as well. But I know I'm not doing a good job of answering the actual question of like what that looks like and where the actual robo-taxi and people's cars fit into the equation. And I really don't know. I have no idea.
I really think the variable is like the production capacity needs to marry the demand, and there simply will not be enough demand for a true driverless vehicle in the millions of units per year to start, because regulation is not there yet. And so if you're gonna kick up this production, like, and so like, okay, and then if you're gonna show this car on 1010 now, right, this robotaxi, with the intent of getting this thing out on the roads by next year, let's say in 2025, and you're gonna have a production ramp that starts with one, and within a year and a half, it's at 3 million units per year, let's say, or more. Is a year and a half really going to be enough to get a run rate of 3 million truly driverless cars per year into jurisdictions that are going to allow it? Maybe. I mean, maybe they know something we don't know. Maybe they think China is going to be up and running a lot quicker than the United States. And they know that with 1.3, 1.4 billion people out there, And they're a lot more, let's say, loose and allow for more, let's say, flexibility for getting your stuff approved in China. Then maybe they're like, dude, we can just fucking dump those in China. Just dump them in China. I don't know.
Well, there's definitely a huge timing element to this, because, you know, if we start production in 2025 of this robotaxi platform, it's going to have a ramp. You know, we're not going to be at 3 million in 2025. We're going to be at, you know, maybe a million produced in 2025. And so do we have robotaxis by that time or not? And if we do, then, you know, that's a different thing than, hey, we're having to produce this steering wheel and pedals version that doesn't, you know, that way we're not just stockpiling, you know, millions of these vehicles on the balance sheet as inventory. And we don't have anywhere to send them. So that's a huge factor. But I do go back to and think about the first autonomy day. Elon said that they're planning to operate Tesla at cash flow break even, and which implies that they plan to have a lot of these vehicles on their own balance sheet, that they're going to be building them ahead of their ability to pay themselves back. And so, yeah, I think that implies that we'll have basically a large portion of Tesla-owned vehicles, like JD was saying, and then obviously there's going to be a number of vehicles that are contributed to the fleet by the, you know, owners of the vehicles who have been customers of Tesla for a long time. And you can imagine a scenario pretty quickly where, you know, even say you have your car and you don't really want to contribute it to the Tesla network, but the network exists and it's very profitable to operate. okay, are you going to refuse someone who's going to come knock on your door and say, hey, we're going to pay you 5 times what you paid for that car when you bought it new. We're just going to hand that amount to you in cash so that we can take your vehicle and we can put it on the network. Because those types of arbitrage opportunities are definitely going to exist. You know, if the car can be profitable to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and a 2018 Model 3 is capable of earning that type of money as long as it's in good condition, then the fact that you don't want to take advantage of that earnings potential doesn't mean that someone else is not willing to pay you handsomely for the right to do that with your car. And so, you know, it could be that people are just upgrading to some other, you know, they're buying a Lucid or a Rivian or, you know, something like that, that, you know, we still want the EV experience. We want the car, but we don't want to be sharing our vehicles with other people. And that really helps to, like, Elon definitely thinks in the limit, and he definitely thinks in the term of economic incentives. Like, if you have the ability to earn that much money, it's just like, it's a matter of time. It's not instant. But it is a forcing function that says all of these things are going to get utilized because it is the most economically efficient way for people to travel from point A to point B. And that's what he's creating, is this, you know, set of economic incentives that force this outcome regardless of how people feel about their personal preferences.
So by the function of that arbitrage situation existing, doesn't that mean that Tesla operating its own fleet becomes less needed because there's going to be a forcing function for people outside of Tesla to operate the fleet for them?
Yeah, I mean, this is an area where I go back and forth, because to me, it doesn't make sense for Tesla to go through the overhead and the headache of like fleet operations is kind of its own thing, and it's not a fun business. And like, to me, it makes a lot more sense to sell those cars to Uber at a premium. You know, like, if this car is going to make you $1 million over its useful lifetime, well, I'm not selling it to you for $30,000, Mr. Fleet Operator. I'm selling it to you for $500,000. And then you can, like, finance that up front and do everything that's necessary. And you can deal with all your overhead to operate it and all of that. But I don't think that that business use case will be relatively clear relatively early on, but I don't think it's just going to materialize overnight in large quantities. I think that's going to have to kind of build up to that. And so, I mean, I think there's more than likely a scenario where there is some Tesla robotaxis, like they're basically operating a pilot and say, like, here's the business, here's the vehicles, here's the numbers, here's everything. And then over time, they're selling to fleet operators as large customers in larger and larger quantities. And eventually that far surpasses the Tesla owned and operated fleet. And all of that's kind of happening in parallel with the customer owned and operated vehicles as well. So, like, there's probably all three of those pieces of the puzzle.
Another thing to think about is people don't like driving. And I think if they were given the opportunity to not have a car, and if they lived in a city where robotaxis were available, that would just make way more sense. I think if full self-driving actually does get solved, there's going to be way more demand than I think we even think, because we're not even thinking about the vehicles that would be off the road, you know, and those people making a trip here and a trip there. You know, you don't want just one robo-taxi. You know, like, people are only going to use the service if it's good. If they can get the robo-taxi in like 5 minutes from when they order it, and, you know, it's always very convenient, there'd be no reason to own a car anymore, and it's safer than, you know, than you driving yourself. So
Well, and if it costs you significantly less, like you're going to be willing to drive more miles. Like I already feel much freer to drive whenever and wherever I want to go just because I have an impulse to do it because like that's a couple of cents worth of electricity instead of, you know, several dollars worth of gas. And that's still at a level where it's, you know, once we get to a full robotaxi future, like the cost of transportation really begins to plummet because not only like do you drive for, you know, very little fuel cost, but now you don't have to pay attention. And so you can be traveling and still be using your time however you want to use it, wherever it is that you're going for essentially zero cost. It just makes sense that more like the price elasticity of demand for transportation means the, you know, the price goes down, more miles get driven. Like that's almost guaranteed what's going to happen.
Yeah. And when we were talking about, when we were talking with Yossi, so car dealership guy, somebody who's definitely not in the weeds like we are in the whole EV Tesla self-driving thing. And he, you know, he's somebody that comes from the legacy auto dealership model. And he just recently purchased a, or at least a Tesla Model Y. And he tried FSD 1236. And even he said, you know, this is undeniably great technology, but I don't see any value for it until I don't have to pay attention. But once I don't have to pay attention, I'll pay a premium because the thing that I value most is my time, right? And so if you have the combination of allowing people to capitalize on time, while at the same time, the thing that's going to give you the time back is going to be at a fraction of the cost of competing solutions, aka Uber or self-driving vehicles that operate in a traditional manner with heuristics and HD maps and LiDAR and ultrasonics, et cetera, right? Then it's like the potential unlock is ridiculous. I was going to say another word, but ridiculous, right? Completely ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. But to people that have been following the story for a long time, this is like, we're just preaching to the choir. It's just, again, I go back to my original point of like, this doesn't feel real. And I've said this multiple times this year, like it doesn't feel real. Every time I get into the car, I'm like, bro, like this is obviously going to happen. It's obviously going to happen. And it's so under the radar. And that's the other part. It's like, it's so under the radar, but you can go and drive one right. And anybody on planet Earth that is in a place where they sell Teslas, they can go. And in places where FSD is operating. So let's say United States and Canada, they can go right now and get into their friends or somebody they know, or go to a Tesla store and try out the current or the newest version of FSD. And I would like to think that most people will be like, okay, yeah, this is totally going to happen. But maybe that there's missing context between where the software has been and where the software is now that perhaps people are like, oh, wow, okay. So like we've seen the trend. We've experienced the trend. You know, we've experienced the trend. And I think that's why we have the tone that we have. But anyway.
I also think just briefly, I just want to say, I think people don't look at full self-driving as just a technology. When they think of full self-driving, they think of Elon. And like a lot of the videos that I'm seeing online and even like some of the comments that I get on my videos, like, oh, I'm unsubscribing because Elon, blah, 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 blah. Like they're not looking at this like a technology. Like I was watching Linus Tech Tips the other day. Like he's very clear in his feelings towards Elon, and he won't even look twice at full self-driving, won't even try it, even though it's available in his country because it's under the Elon umbrella. And Elon is the boy who's cried wolf several times saying we're right around the corner of solving full self-driving. And like, you know, nobody believes him at this point. But the people that are in the cars are believing him at this point. And it's not Elon who's hyping up these latest releases as much as the Tesla AI team, which is a big change that's been shifting. But I think there's a lot of... I think there's a lot of Elon bad out there, and people can't separate the two. They can't look at full self-driving as just a technology because it's under the Tesla umbrella.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And I think once it's obvious to those people that they can get in from point A to point B at a fraction of the cost with way more luxury and privacy, the economics will force behavior. And that's how capitalism works, you know? And there'll be a small percentage of the population that can afford it. They will choose not to do that, right? For whatever reason. And I still feel like that's a very small percentage of the population. And I think a lot of it is posturing, because it's like that's the hot thing to do right now, you know? But it is what it is. So we'll see if I'm right. But undeniably, from my standpoint, is that Tesla is very much on the path to solve this thing very, very soon, within the next 6 to 12 months, to the point where it's going to be crystal clear what robotaxi will be, how it will operate, when it's going to launch, how much it's going to cost, what jurisdictions it's going to be in, what does the long term look like, what is the ownership model, what is the fleet model. All that stuff's going to get answered here in the next 6 to 12 months. That I'm extremely confident in. And if I'm not confident in that, and if that ends up being wrong, then I'm gonna be one of those anti-Elon folks. I'll switch up my tune. Just kidding. I think I'm way too optimistic. I can't even do that. That's just not me. All right. Any last words?
No. I mean, I don't want to bring up an entirely new subject, but one step I would really like to see, maybe during the robotaxi unveil, is I think a large portion of this has to do, like, one of the main reasons full self-driving doesn't work in a lot of areas right now, and all these people like, oh, 12.5 still sucks, it's because, like, the maps are telling the car to do the wrong thing. If Tesla released Tesla maps, that would be the biggest sign to me that we're right on the verge of something huge happening. Because once they don't have to rely on other people's data, and they can just, like, oh, there was four cars that drove through this area in the last week, and they all disagree with the current map. Like, let's just, you know, they just automatically update and maintain this. It's technically going to be a low definition map. Like, that would get rid of so many problems immediately. And that would be the next big step I would want to see Tesla take, is Tesla maps.
Well, wasn't there something you shared, I think, where one of the upcoming versions has the ability to communicate to the fleet when there are changes to the road based on construction? Wasn't that you?
No, I don't. There was an Elon tweet. I guess I'll try to find it. And he briefly mentioned, like, something like, oh, 12, we're training 12.5 on situations where it gets stuck at the end of the street and has to turn around. And I think he mentioned at the end of the tweet, and we're probably going to have to make that car signal to other Teslas that there's a blockage so they don't get stuck too. And I believe there's been nothing else said beyond that, but people have been kind of running with it and saying that these are all happening right now. But that requires Tesla maps, which isn't, you know, Elon hasn't even hinted that that's going to be a thing. So I think we're going to have to wait and see on that one. But yeah, as far as I know, and I could be wrong, that was it was just a brief comment at the end of one of his tweets.
Got it. But in theory, I mean, they have the data. They just have to put it to work. They just have to add it to the model in some way, right? It's like exception based routing or something like that.
I mean, they have an opportunity to do a lot more than that. If you think about the product that is Google Maps, like, they have way fewer cars than Tesla has that have a single 360 camera on them that drives around, and, like, that's how they gather and maintain all of their map data. Like, Tesla's got, at least in the United States and Canada, like, you'd think that they would have the ability to make by far the best, most accurate, most up-to-date maps possible, just off of fleet data, if they decide, okay, it's time to make that product. And I think it is a matter of prioritization. So I would 100% agree. Like, when we see them make that a priority, like, it's something they can do. It's obvious. It's low hanging fruit. It's something that I have a hard time imagining not happening, because they do need that in order to operate like a robotaxi, you know, at least. And that may be the thing that tells us, you know, like this is where the robotaxis are going to operate, is because like all of a sudden there's a Tesla map of San Francisco and there's a Tesla map of Los Angeles and of Austin and of Phoenix and Chandler and, you know, all these different places. Because, you know, do you really want to depend on Google or, you know, some third party provider to give you that data and to make it accurate and up to date when you have all of the sensors on the road to give you the most up to date information? Like, why would you, when you have the ability to provide yourself with way better data than anyone else could provide to you, why would you trust anyone else to do that? So I can't wait to see that product come into existence.
Yeah, it seems like you're exactly what you said. It seems like such low hanging fruit. On the last AI day when they showed, you know, all these different Teslas and the footage from their cameras, and then they overlaid it into a map and it just built a map with all the arrows, all the lane lines, all the curbs just instantly. Like, man, once that's stitched into the end-to-end model some way, like it seems like it's overnight going to become a much better driver than it already is, even with the same technology.
My friend was talking about how Tesla could leverage their images of roads for potholes. Just like, hey, like just partner with local governments and be like, yo, here are your potholes, go fix them, please. You know, it becomes very valuable data they can sell. Or whatever else, like, you know, broken traffic lights, broken signs, missing signs, you know, pedestrian, you know, markings that are not well marked, crosswalks, so on and so forth, right? Lane markings. It's like everything. And they could sell that information to governments, or they can provide it as a service. I don't know. You know, it's crazy. Endless opportunity.
I mean, I have thought for a long time that this is definitely also a large commercial opportunity for other, you know, other people who are going to be developing self-driving software. Is like, here's your, whatever you want to call it, low resolution, medium resolution, potentially even high resolution maps for way cheaper than the guy down the street who has to create those maps with LiDAR and, you know, way more overhead, that you can sell this mapping data. And just real world topology of all the drivable space. That's a huge asset to have, and Tesla can essentially acquire it for free. The cost is just going to be whatever the server time is to, you know, run whatever special neural nets that they design that can take in all this 2D camera data and stitch it together into these 3D shapes and maps. But yeah, like it's going to take you maybe 10,000 of your H100 GPUs, and they're going to have to run for, you know, a few weeks, and then poof, you have this thing that is the world's best map data ever by far, like no questions asked.
Tesla wins is really the conclusion here. As long as they can solve self-driving. Okay. My God. Asterisk. All right. Anything else?
So I do actually, I remembered a question. What's your experience in 12.5 with respect to speed limits? Like, can you get it to consistently, like, this is one of my biggest frustrations with 12.3.6. Like, I want it to go at least 5 miles an hour over the speed limit anywhere and everywhere at all times. And I can't get it to, like, the thing drives like a grandma all the time and it drives me nuts.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, the issue is still there. It's just less so. So I have the complete opposite problem where I live, where the car goes way too fast for my liking. Today it was going, or no, it was yesterday, 25 mile an hour street with narrow roads. It always goes 37, like every single time. And also I know that on there's another kind of narrow road that has a 50 mile an hour speed limit. And if there's no lead car, sometimes it'll go 44. I've had it go 44 twice on that road. And the other times it was just, over, I think it was like 58 or something. But the good news, I think the thing that bugged me the most about the speed control in 12.3.6 is that it would do a lot of lurching, like going over the speed limit and then immediately going back down. And you have this, you know what I mean? And most of that is gone. And that's the good news. I wouldn't say speed control is drastically better in 12.5, but the feeling of it is a lot better.
Yeah, and the reason that I was thinking about that was because it plays back into map data. Like, there's no reason that Tesla should not know exactly what the speed limit is on every inch of every road that any Tesla has ever driven. Like, it's not hard. The speed limit signs are pretty much there. And whatever it is that they're using to say this is how fast the speed limit is on this road is not great. And especially anytime there's like any rain, the cameras just cannot read the speed limit signs whatsoever. And they have no idea how fast they should be going. Like, they'll be doing 40 in a 60 mile an hour road, and then they'll be doing 50 in a 35. It's just like, okay, come on, car. Like, this shouldn't be that hard. And it is. Like, it just comes back to that really needs to be data that's just ground truth from a map. Like, this is the speed limit on this road.
To me, it just sounds like you have a Texas driver in Jersey and a Jersey driver in Texas. That's just, you know, and the system can't figure out which one it's, you know, what mood it's in at that given time. My dad's going to be thrilled hearing about how it goes 12 over the speed limit, because in his area, that's how everybody drives. Lunatics, crazy people. Eastern Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York. Oh my God. Especially New Jersey. There are wild people out there. Okay. Anything else? No? You should have seen the outtakes from the last one, JD. It was a disaster. I tried it like 7 times and I kept fumbling over myself.
Well, thank you for that wonderful introduction. But somebody recently asked Grok about all the best FSD channels, and I didn't even make the top 8.
Well, you're not top one, brother. We got you. On the list that matters, you're top one, damn it. Hell yeah.
Once Grok 2 figures itself out, then you'll be number one, according to Grok. Yeah,
easily.
Nice. I can't wait. I was heartbroken, man. That did something to me.
And if you're not number one, I'm boycotting X. You hear that, Elon? No more. I'm unsubscribing from my blue check mark, which I don't think I pay for anyway. I think I have enough followers that are anyway. Fuck it. All right. End recording. Okay. I need to go pee really bad. I'll be back in a second. I don't know, Hans, if you have a question to ask, go for it. But I'll be back in a minute. I should probably mute so you all don't hear me fucking taking a piss.
I'm going to leave that. Well, make sure to edit in flush noises, even if we don't get them on.